And we really appreciate the great participation from the community and from the membership here. And we're going to have two people. Where's Casey? Where's Melanie? You didn't think you were eating, did you? Oh, yeah, she thought you were. Okay, so Melanie thought she was eating. Where's Casey? There's Casey. Okay, so they are our runners. So, and sometimes there may be a question off the stage that might get handed to you. And then where is Mark Shear? He needs to be somewhere closer. Marcus? Where? Mr. Shear? Calling Mr. Shear. I need to have somebody right over here for a consolidator to can take these things and then, as much as topically possible, hand them to me. And we'll restate the question. We're not going to necessarily ask them verbatim. They're only going to have a minute to answer the question, as I said. So don't make the questions too small a font or too long and verbose. So we'll try to get as many in as possible. And then we have a timekeeper for the panel, Alec Mesteg here in the front. Alec, what does a 15-second warning look like, please? Yeah, that's what it looks like. Okay, and then when time's up, the white sheet goes. So one very interesting thing. 2006, Southeast Conference was meeting right here. It was actually, according to the newspaper article, it was a Wednesday, September 20th, because this is the 21st edition, and it's labeled Showdown in Ketchikan. There's three gubernatorial candidates up on the stage, and it says, why should I be governor? Candidates make their pitches. And just to show you how much the world has changed in those 12 years, the headlines also read in this edition, Roadless Rule. Ha! Okay, there it is. Permanent dividends on the rise, $1,106.96. Front page news. The local news, I don't know, Ketchikan folks, is this still relevant? Council eyes sidewalks, PERS, senior housing needs. You got those things all solved? Not quite. Okay, well, the clincher is the national byline here. It's a third world leader. The president, it was actually Venezuela in this case, calls the United States president the devil. How times have changed. Okay, I saved that. That was a priceless article. And here we are again. And we're very, very pleased to have this opportunity to have each of these gubernatorial candidates with us today. And each of you have considerable public service to Alaska, and we thank you for that, and we thank you for participating in this annual meeting event, which has been open to the public. And we're glad to have you here as well. Media is present, and we look forward to interacting with you over the next hour plus. So we've asked everyone gathered here to forward questions, and those will be asked. There's Mr. Shear, so our runners can take them to here, and he'll be bringing them up to me. And we will combine the similar ones as best as possible. We obviously won't get to all of them, so we'll just keep going. We're going to provide each candidate 3 minutes, up to 3 minutes, for an opening statement, and those will be delivered in alphabetical order. We'll then rotate the order of response throughout this next hour of questions and answers, and each candidate will have 1 minute to answer the questions that come from the audience. Be flexible within reason for that, and if there's a need for clarification, there may be an additional 30 seconds allocated for that. Closing statements will also be 3 minutes and presented in the opposite order of the opening statements. So we have our timer there in the front with his paddles, and he will be ready to go. We'll begin with Senator Begich, move to Senator Dunleavy, and then to Governor Walker. So, Senator Begich, thank you.
Thank you very much. Is that on? Very good. Thank you very much. Thanks to the Southeast Conference for allowing us here today. What a packed crowd. And we have people up here in the bleachers. We appreciate that also. This is a great opportunity to hopefully give you a sense of the differences between the three of us, but also answer some of the questions that are pertinent to you. You know, I have served in local government 10 years on the City Assembly. I joke with people, if you can survive the Assembly, you can survive any political office ever delivered to you. I've also been in the mayor and also U.S. Senator. But, you know, this election, I got into the governor's race because I truly believed that there was not a long-term plan of where we're headed. If I asked any one of you in this audience today, where did you think or where do you think the state is taking us over the next 10 years? What's the end result? we'd have many different answers because there's not a clear signal. When you look around the state and you hear some incredible statistics, when we're number one in crime now in the nation, when you think about education, we're now number 46 out of 50 states. I saw a new one on economic opportunity, which I could not believe. We were number 51, and I asked the person, how can that be? And they said, well, we're now below Puerto Rico. And when you think of these statistics, you have to wonder what has happened to our state. You know, where I live, and I was born and raised in Anchorage, lived on the east side and continue to live there. You know, I used to just, as a kid, it was no problem. As parents would let us out, have some fun, be outside, play kick the can in a very technological way with a Folgers tin can and sticks in it. That was it. Or swam in a lake called Gravel Pit Lake. It was safe in a different community. Today, it's not that way. No matter where I go, who I talk to, these are the issues that people are concerned about. Along with that is the permanent fund dividend. What's going to happen? You saw in the presentation that Commissioner Navarre gave is that's kind of the prognosis for the next several years to continue to debate that. I think that's the wrong approach. If we continue to debate that issue, we will never solve the great issues that are in front of us. How to make sure our education system is the best? How do we make sure it's a safe community? How do we grow the economy? Instead of seeing a presentation that I saw, and I think it was a great presentation in regards to oil and gas, there are many other things to our economy. Fisheries, tourism, transportation, technology. All these things play into the future of Alaska. I got into the race because I felt that was not the discussion. Alaska has an incredible future if we focus on it. If we're stuck in the budget battles every single year, we will not focus on the future of Alaska. We have a huge population of millennials that are leaving our state because they don't see hope. I was over at the university today, saw some incredible new programming over there, which is exciting. We have a great state with great opportunity. Today, hopefully you'll see the differences and the opportunity for you to make a choice on where the state should go into the future. Thank you all very much.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you. That's better. Thank you, and thanks for having us here today. I want to thank Senator Begich and Governor Walker for also attending the forum. For a moment, I thought that was the choir up there, and I was waiting for a song, but I guess it's not going to come. Anyway, it's a pleasure to be here. This is, for me, this is a story about a young man from Pennsylvania, myself, back in 1983, that always wanted to come to Alaska, just graduated from college. And I had some connections in Southeast Alaska. Right after college, got on a plane, came out to Seattle, took the Columbia up to Ketchikan, was my first stop in Alaska. So it's in a way, it's good to be home. And then I went over to Prince of Wales Island and worked at Whale Pass, Gildersleeve Log. And it was a tremendous time in Alaska at that point. The opportunities were amazing. The optimism was through the roof. The pipeline was just ramping up, wouldn't meet peak production till 1989. Folks were making money hand over fist. There were jobs everywhere, up and down the islands here in terms of logging and other industries. I can recall meeting two individuals as I landed. They were working at the logging camp, and they were going to Seattle. And I said, where are you going? And they said, we're going to buy a pickup truck. And all I had was cash in their pockets. Those were the types of jobs that Alaska promised. Anyone from the state of Alaska or coming to Alaska, it was incredible. On July 2nd, July 3rd, I went to Anchorage for a weekend. Celebrate July 4th, and met with some friends up there in Anchorage, and we went to a picnic, and there were 20 people on that picnic. Everybody in that picnic was making $50,000 or more back in 1983. $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. Some folks had multiple jobs. The whole discussion in that picnic was, can I poach this individual from this job to help me with my industry? Do you want to help us out with mining? I got a small mining operation. I mean, it was just incredible. And again, the pipeline had yet to reach peak production. Flash forward 4 years later, or excuse me, 4 years ago, or excuse me, 2 years ago, I go to a picnic in Wasilla. There's 20 people there. People are making $35,000 a year, $40,000 a year. Something has happened to Alaska over the past 4 years. As was mentioned earlier, we now lead the nation in so many different statistics that we should not be proud of. We have the worst educational system in the country. We have the worst crime statistics in the country. And if you go out in some parts of the state of Alaska, in rural Alaska, western Alaska, northern Alaska, those statistics are third world statistics. We have the highest unemployment in the nation. You look at other states like Colorado at 2.4%, New Hampshire 2.6%. Our neighbor in the Pacific, Hawaii, is at 2%, virtually no unemployment. Everyone's fully employed, except in the state of Alaska. That 3 minutes went by fast. Anyway, what we'll be talking about here today is how we're going to differentiate ourselves and how I'm going to, as governor, bring back that Alaska that we knew we once had and we can have again by using our resources to work for us, producing wealth, producing jobs, and creating an Alaska we all can be proud of. Thank you.
Thank you. Governor Walker.
Good afternoon. It's great to be back in Ketchikan. Let me sort of introduce myself more formally. I had the honor of being adopted and named in the Tlingit name, and my name is Goochwak, which stands for Wolf Eyes. I'm a member of the Eagle Clan. Byron is a member of the Raven Clan, so we are balanced, and there's all sorts of things that go on between a brother-in-law and a different clan that you can borrow things and get things for $5, and it's been pretty amazing. I am honored to be the governor of Alaska. I am honored to be the only independent governor in the nation. I am honored that I can make and do things for our state that are way beyond outside of any party limitations. I am honored to serve as the governor with Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. The unity ticket is something that's never been done before. When two people run against for the same office, at some point we decided at a debate like this, and I'm not sure that's going to happen at this debate, but we decided that we loved our state more than we loved politics, and that was in Nome. We say our first date was in Nome, and in some respects it was. We realized that, and it's an incredible way to do business. It's an incredible way to make decisions, to have a cabinet that is completely void of partisan counting and scores. It's made up of Alaskans, and I am very, very pleased and very proud of the cabinet that we have put together. We've done some tough stuff. You know, when we hear about the last 4 years have been tough, you bet they've been tough. Tell me about that. You know, they're making the decisions that were required to be made. And none of them were pleasant, but they had to be made. And I'm not sure that it could have been done if you were associated with one party or another party, because it would perhaps spill over and have some impact. I don't look at it that way. I don't take a poll before I make a decision. I talk to a lot of people. I get a lot of input, but I make a decision. And I make a decision that I believe in my heart is what's best for Alaska. And I've made some really tough ones. Alaska has a great future. We have absolutely a phenomenal future because of the decisions that have been made. You know, you have to have a fiscal foundation. I'm from a building background. I have to have a strong foundation before whatever I build. And if you don't have a checkbook that's balanced, if you're borrowing, if you're drawing down a savings of $14 billion, which is what happened, it's hard to sit down and have, now let's talk about our future. You've got to fix that. You've got to put out that fiscal fire. And it was on fire. It was huge. And I applaud the legislature this last session of stepping up and saying, we're gonna stand with you. We're going to fix this. And it has been fixed. Now let's get on with our future. Now that we have that strong foundation, that strong fiscal opportunity for the future of the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. So the first priority of Southeast Conference in 1958 was the creation of a viable marine transportation system. So no surprise, the first question for you today is regarding the reform project that Alaskans are working on, solution sets that will bring about operational efficiencies. Is this a process you can support and give due consideration to the recommended outcomes? What is your approach to making the marine highway system more viable in the foreseeable future? We'll begin with Governor Walker and over the right.
You know, I issued a signed an MOU with this organization to bring you to the table, to bring your input, your solutions. Those that depend upon the system are going to be closer to the solution of it. So I reached out to you to do that, and you're in the process of doing that, and I appreciate that. You know, I think we have to look at the system on a system-wide basis, and we're doing that. And we want, what I don't want to do is continue to have this ongoing battle in Juneau about the funding. You know, the funding has been decreased about $30 million over the past several years, and that hurts. That hurts significantly. It's got to be reliable. You've got to know what's going to be there. And people say the ridership is down. You know why the ridership is down? Because we're not there. If you don't show up on time, how are you going to plan for that? So I am, I couldn't be more supportive of the marine highway system. I've had businesses in Valdez that depended upon it. Byron the same way. I think the answer is in Alaska. I really do. And we're working towards that. Part of it is money. Part of it is attitude.
Thank you very much. First off, I'm a big fan of the Marine Highway System. When I was growing up as a kid, we were on it every summer. And my mom, who's 80 years old, still drives now from Carson City, Nevada, up here and gets on the Marine Highway System. Misses the bar that's not there on a couple of them, but that's a different story. But it could be a revenue producer. Let me put that aside. But here's the challenge. For years, the Marine Highway System has been treated like a second-class citizen to the transportation network of our state. It's a part of the transportation system. When we talk highways and bridges, we should include the Marine Highway System in that conversation. When I was in the Senate, we were able to change part of the formula because Washington State was working on it to add some more money to it. But there is more work to be done here. First, you need to bring it up to standards that everyone desperately needs. You need to have it move on time, because if it isn't on time, people don't take it. Three, it is never going to make money. It's going to have a portion of it being subsidized by the state of Alaska, just like our roads and bridges are. So we have to come to that conclusion. Time ran out.
The Marine Highway is integral to Southeast Alaska. As I mentioned, I came up on the Columbia, my first trip to Alaska, back in 1983. And so I think we all recognize that the Marine Highway System is the highway system for Southeast. I support what the group is doing, and I look forward to working with that group and finding efficiencies and ways to make it make the Marine Highway System a sustainable system for generations to come. And I think by putting our collective heads together, we can come up with some ideas that will get us there. So I fully support the efforts that are being made.
Thank you. First question will begin with Senator Begich. The state and the Forest Service is embarking on a path to change the roadless rule in the Tongass. Would your administration continue this effort, or what is your approach to how forests are managed?
Yeah, when I was in the Senate, same thing. We supported the effort, but also making sure that's an Alaska initiative, not a nationwide initiative. Alaska has unique needs when it comes to roadless rules. We need to make sure it meets our needs for whatever timber production there is, but also for our incredible fisheries and our streams and our visitor industry. It's a combination of things that you have to look at when you look at this issue. I can tell you, I remember being in the Senate and having to go to the Tongass roundtable meetings, which are always very interesting, very contentious at times. But we need to have an Alaska solution, not a national solution. So from an Alaska perspective, as governor, I'd be very engaged to make sure it reflects the needs of all users in our Southeast communities, because it has changed quite a bit in what we have today and what we had 30 years ago or 40 years ago.
Absolutely. This would be one of the priorities of my administration. As I mentioned when I first came up here, I went to Prince of Wales Island, Whale Pass, and worked in logging camp, and I could see what using our resources could do in terms of family wage jobs, keeping people off of welfare programs, and just the overall economy that was impacted by the timber industry in the Southeast Alaska. So this would be a priority of mine. I'll be focused on this. We're already having discussions on how we would go about doing it, and you can count on me as governor to make sure that we get a robust timber industry back in Southeast Alaska.
Governor Walker.
Let me be clear. I fully support the waiver we've been seeking. Last month, I entered into an MOU between the state of Alaska and the Department of Agriculture on the roadless rule. The offshoot of that is earlier this week, I signed Administrative Order, I believe 299, that began that created the Tongass Citizens Advisory Committee, 13 members, which will, from all walks of life, from timber, from mining, fishing, environmental, tourism, to be able to have, you know, everybody have an opportunity to participate in that discussion. I've been very pleased with Secretary Perdue. I think it's helpful. He's a former governor of Georgia. He's been very helpful. And very aggressive on making that happen. I think partly because he came up here. You know, he came up here, he went to Prince of Wales, he went to Kurt Dahlstrom's, timber business and saw the opportunity, but he also saw the opportunity on other areas and the need for a balanced approach. And so that's what we have done, and I look forward to that, making that selection in the next week as far as the individuals on that committee.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy, we'll start with you. What is your plan to put the state on a sustainable fiscal plan, and how does the PFD relate to that plan?
It's a great question. So back in 1982, the people of Alaska, as was mentioned earlier, this is repeating history over and over again. Back in 82, the people of Alaska put forth an appropriation limit. They voted on an appropriation limit in the Constitution, which would have limited the growth of our operating budget. The problem back then, and by the way, it was reaffirmed in 1986 by the people of Alaska, they were very concerned with the growth of the operating budget and the spending that was occurring at that time. The problem with that amendment at that time was it was pegged at too high of a spend with too high of a baseline. First thing I would do is make sure that we get that spend down somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 billion with a percentage of growth over the years, and start with an appropriation limit. Make sure as governor you submit smaller budgets, and make sure that you, as governor, you veto any frivolous spending that goes above that cap. And as far as the PFD goes, PFD was never the problem. Don't change the PFD. You can always use the other 50% of the earnings if we need to use that for government as well.
Thank you. Governor Walker.
You know, the fiscal situation is something that is, you've got to complete that. It's got to be fixed, and there's some options available to it. But I think we have to be willing to have an adult conversation about it. And I don't think you can take certain things off the table and say, I'm against this, I'm against that. Look, I don't like taxes at all. But somehow we have to figure out how we're going to pay for the services that we want. We want a safer Alaska. We all want a safer Alaska. How are we going to pay for that? You know, we all want improvements in our state infrastructure, deferred maintenance. How are we going to pay for that? So we have to have a discussion about how we are going to have that, pay for that, but also have the stability going forward. And again, that's what we have done, is bringing down from 90% dependent upon the price of oil down to about 35% dependent upon the price of oil. That's the mistake that was made over the years, and we have got to have a full fiscal plan. And without a full fiscal plan, it's really hard to have the stability and the peace of mind going forward that we can forward fund education, that we can forward fund some of these things. It has to be a full fiscal plan.
Senator Wiggins.
I think there's three things to the fiscal plan. First is you do have to take the issue of the permanent fund dividend off the table some way. I propose an idea using the percent of market value, take 50% of it, put it in the Constitution to support a sustainable dividend. The other 50%, again, constitutionally protected for education funding, taking it out of the GF dollars so we don't have this debate every single year that they always like to do at the end of the session. Use education as a bargaining chip. Put that off to the side. Then you have another step, which there are many opportunities within government. I've seen it when I was mayor, how you can make it run more efficiently. I can give you example after example. I've heard from employees how the system is broken because people have not focused on how to manage. When you're the governor, you not only have to have big ideas, you also have to be a manager of a 20,000-person operation. And last, you will need some funding. You will need some revenues. I always hear Senator Dunleavy bring up the use of the Perna Fund earnings. The problem is his solution doesn't include inflation-proofing the fund. So over time, it will be zero because you don't have the value of the dollars.
Hey, it's ironic that the follow-up question on here says, the day you start office, oil drops down to $10. Well, probably maybe it drops $10 or $20, but the ironic part is that the question begins with you, sir. Governor Walker.
It just doesn't stop. Well, I guess the good news is that would impact about 30% of our revenue as a result of what's been done, is that we've taken that down from before at 90%. That's a huge deal. So, you know, we have to be able to look at other forms of revenue. Every other state has. I paid a school tax when my first paycheck, I think it was $10 back then. You know, we had to contribute. I paid an income tax. I'm not driving for taxation like some say I am, but I am driving for stability. So we aren't always ripping open the paper or looking online every day, what's oil price today? That's the mistake that's what we're warned about by Governor Hammond, and that's where we are today. We've got to get off of that mentality that oil is going to be the rainstorm that comes in and puts out the fire. It just doesn't work that way.
Senator Begich.
So with the question, if oil got to $10 a barrel, we'd all be in a world of hurt. So what the real issue, again, is the fiscal plan. How do you do this? It's multifaceted. You know, when I was mayor of Anchorage, we faced a $33 million hole in our budget on a $215 million budget. We didn't say, woe me. We didn't cry poor. We went out there and figured it out. 40% of our growth of taxation came from new development. We also invested in our city by putting bonds for it. So people saw, the private sector saw, that we were investing in our state, in our community. That is an important part of this equation. I think when you look at the budget issues, I mentioned some of the ideas, you're going to have to find some efficiencies. For example, at the public assistance, they run two computers side by side for the last 3.5 years. Why? Because they're afraid to turn off the first one because they may not be working on the second one. Well, that contractor should be fired. I can go through the list of these efficiencies, how to run the government much more efficiently. But at the end of the day, we are going to have to put some resources collectively on the table to make sure we fund the services we care and want in this state.
Senator Dunleavy.
Well, there was a time when oil was $10 a barrel, and we survived as a state. It was production that saved us at that time and a lower budget that saved us at that time. And we didn't have an income tax during that period of time in the 80s and 90s. And so I'm not proposing that we prepare for $10, although it may come, and we would have to deal with it when we do. But the bottom line is, if we keep spending at the rate we're spending at, and this is what's really not being talked about, there is no amount of PFD or tax that's going to save us. For example, our budget this year went up 4.7%. That's the UGF spend. The overall budget with federal money went up 15%. There's not enough taxes. There's not enough tax base in the state of Alaska to tax to fill that gap. So we have to become more efficient in what we do. We have to cap the size of our operating budget. We have to get more oil in the pipeline, and we have to develop local economies like we have in Southeast with more timber, minerals, fishing, tourism. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is on ballot measure number one, which you've heard a lot about the consequences on everything from municipal public health and safety projects to business and industry. We'll begin with Senator Begich. Would you please explain your position on this ballot measure?
Yes, I support the ballot initiative. I will tell you I was mixed on it for many months. I waited for the court to make their decision. The court did some more work on the initiative. I believe I look at this initiative now, and I consider it a right-to-know initiative. What is wrong with being notified that when a mega project occurs in your community that you're going to get notified? What's wrong with the community having a chance to comment through a state process on a project within your community? When people put mitigation on projects, what's wrong with making sure those mitigation requirements are upheld? But here's the crux of the problem. There's been no question among the industry and the environmental community that Title 16 has been need to be revised since statehood. There was a bill in the legislature. There was a few hearings, not much work done on it. People didn't do the work. This is the response. When the government doesn't do their work, the initiative process kicks into gear because the public decides to do things. When I was mayor, we didn't have initiatives. Why? Because when we saw issues of this controversy show up, we sat down with both sides and solved the problems. That is what's missing in Juneau today.
Our problem isn't that we don't have enough regulations. Our problem is that we have too many regulations. And this would be just another addition. This would be another nail in the coffin for Alaska as a resource-producing state, as a job-producing state, and a state that creates wealth. We have some of the strictest environmental regulations in the world. And what an initiative like this will do, or similar initiatives, is just push jobs and investment overseas. Is what's going to happen, into places where they don't have environmental regulations. So if you want to develop something the right way, keep jobs in Alaska, develop wealth, develop revenue for the state of Alaska, you want to make sure that we don't have onerous regulations and barriers put up in front of us to be able to do this. So the bottom line is I'm a no on one. I've always been a no on one because I want to put people, jobs, and creating wealth first.
Governor Walker.
I'm a no on one as well. And the reason is that making regulations at the ballot box is a blunt instrument. There's no opportunity for discussion back and forth. I think we have strong regulations. I think they can be improved. But on the public process, I think something that happened, that we used to have a coastal zone management process that allowed local communities just to have an opportunity to have a word and have a say and know something was going to happen at the embryonic stage of that project. And that's what's necessary. I don't think this is the right tool to do that. I think that the reason we are seeing these is because they feel some communities are concerned. They'll wake up one day to a headline. And the way to do that is have something in place that they can be involved early on into it. But to do these kind of regulations, anybody that's looking at doing a hydro project, any project that's involving water in any way, it's going to be an incredible burden upon them in order to get that permitted. So it just adds in one more layer of challenge. So I think it's going to be difficult for Alaska to come out of where we are if we have those kind of onerous restrictions. I'm a no.
And that is directly related to the follow-up, beginning with Senator Dunleavy. If this ballot measure passes, how do you plan to implement the significant changes and pay for them?
That's a great question. So it'll be law. It'll be law for at least 2 years. And so we would have to, as the governor, my job is to implement the law. We would develop regulations. I would develop regulations that would do as little harm as possible to the business environment while keeping in compliance with the law. Again, I think we need to seriously think about when we go to the ballot box, what this initiative can do, what this initiative could do to the state of Alaska and our potential future job creation and industry creation. And so as governor, I'd have to implement the law, and we'd look at it very carefully and make sure that the regulations that we put forth impact business in a minimal fashion but comply with the law.
Governor Walker.
It's pretty clear when the initiative is passed, you implement it, and you follow the letter of the law, whether you voted for it or not or supported for it or not. So that's really non-negotiable. If it passes, we will honor the vote of the people, and the people say that's what they want, and then we will honor that and implement it.
Senator Begich.
You know, if the law passes, there's a couple things you do need to do. First, as they both have said, you need to implement the regulations, but you also have to monitor it. You have to work with the people that may be impacted, as all these ads that we all get to read and see tell us that some bad thing's going to happen. Well, we should monitor it for those period of time, because if there's need to reflect on that law and make modifications, then you should do it. That's part of being an administrator, a CEO, a governor, is not just put the law in place, but also if you put the regulations, see what more has to be done. For example, you don't want people to utilize this as a frivolous way to delay projects. And if that's what's occurring, I can tell you, I'll work after the 2 years to modify that. But you don't just allow the law as it goes on the books and just say, that's it, you're done. You review it. You constantly review any piece of legislation that passes, maybe by initiative or by the legislature, to ensure that it is doing what it's initial. Just like SB 91, you know, they passed it, implemented it, and it all went to hell. And then they all figured out, oh, my God, we got to revise it. That's the process. That's what you should do as governor and constantly look at these issues.
Next question, and we'll begin with Governor Walker. What is the future of PERS, TERS, and revenue sharing? What do you see as the future of those programs?
Well, I have long said, I've been on the other side of the PERS, TERS position, so I understand it pretty well. That 22% will stay under my administration. I will not increase that. Without going into, in less than a minute, all the background of the PERS and TERS issue, you know, the local governments really had little say, if anything, on the PERS and TERS. And so when it turned out that was the actuarial estimates were incorrect, that wasn't the fault of local governments. So I will not be any part of increasing the PERS and TERS. You know, there's some pension obligation bond opportunities we can use to help bring down the cost of that, spread it over longer periods of time, but it will not be shifted onto local government under my administration.
I was mayor of Anchorage when that came into play, so you can imagine my support to keep it at the 22%. It has a huge impact. It's gone the wrong way for our local governments. On top of that, with PERS and TERS, you do have to figure out, it's about a $10 billion liability. We have to figure out a schedule plan to make sure we are investing the money back into PERS and TERS for the long-term health of that program. On top of PERS, and well, let me just say this, one of our big challenges is going to be for the recruitment for the employees that we utilize in our public safety and our overall general government. Our program of retirement is a problem now. We are losing people because we do not have a strong retirement program. We will have to look at this and find a net neutral cost, one that does a defined benefit in some form or another in order to attract people the quality that we want and keep them in our government workforce. Along with that, you had mentioned municipal assistance and revenue sharing, I think. I do believe in it. I remember when Sarah Palin whacked away at it and we came down with a group of mayors to turn her mind around on it, because this is our ability as local government to share in the wealth of this great state to offset the costs that always shove down to local governments.
This is an obligation that must be met. This is a promise that must be kept. The issue surrounding PERS and TERS was not an issue created by the workers. The way you get out of this is you grow your economy. Again, you get more oil in the pipeline. You produce more wealth and more revenue to help pay this down. That's how we're going to get out of this. That's how we're going to get out of a lot of these issues. But this was not an issue created by the municipalities or the workers. This is an issue that needs to be handled by the state, and as governor, I'll deal with it.
Okay. Thank you. We'll move to fisheries. Senator Begich, we'll begin with you. Private nonprofit hatcheries are an integral part of the Alaska salmon industry, augmenting natural returns by providing additional salmon habitat opportunities for user groups. Will your administration strongly support a robust hatchery effort?
I have, when I was not only mayor, supporting the efforts, but two, as senator, and I will continue to do that. Actually, I know there's great debate within the fishing industry about what are hatcheries doing in the sense of impact or not impact. Are they putting too much fish in the sea? I believe hatcheries are an important part of the equation of our fisheries, not only here in Southeast but throughout Alaska. So I'll continue to support them. I think the one in Juneau, I was very excited to see their new, they have this huge check on the wall of their repayment of their debt to the state, which is an amazing accomplishment for these hatcheries. So I'm a big supporter of them and will continue. They are part of the equation of our fisheries overall, but we have a bigger challenge with fisheries. You know it if you're in the commercial fishing business or sports fishing. We see the impact that's going on all across the state, and I believe there's a lack of science and understanding of what this will mean for us for a long term for our fisheries industry.
Commercial fisheries, as we know, is a huge economic driver here in Southeast and across the state. And as such, hatcheries are an integral part of that. I'll continue to support those programs in order to enhance fisheries and work with commercial fishermen and commercial fishing industry to grow the industry to the extent we possibly can. So I'm in support of it.
Governor Walker?
I fully support hatcheries. I'm very familiar with the VFDA in Valdez and also in Pisgah in Cordova. What the hatcheries have done is they've taken some of the peaks and valleys out of the returns. They've sort of filled in the voids along the way. It's been a real lifesaver in the commercial fishing in many areas that have utilized the hatcheries. I'm sorry to see that it's risen to where it is now. Is that they're sort of under attack a bit on the egg take as a result of a request from one of the hatcheries to take another 20 million egg take this year. I am fully supportive of hatcheries.
Thank you. Continuing with fisheries, it's kind of a two-part question. We'll begin with Senator Dunleavy. If you were governor of Alaska, would you impose a tax on the commercial fishing industry? Apparently, there was a bill at one point to place a 12% royalty tax on seafood. Your position, please.
Yes, and that was a bill that I put forward after discussions with folks in the commercial industry. This is when oil was about $26 a barrel, and there was concerns that reductions in the fish and game budget was going to impact the seasons and the ability to monitor the fisheries. So when I had discussions with folks, they put forward the possibility of helping to pay for some of these studies. I put forth this bill. Immediately, I got feedback that this was not exactly what we had talked about, and so I never did move the bill. But I would be willing to have discussions with folks in the commercial fishing industry to see, as we move forward, how to make sure that we have the proper studies in place, the proper enforcement, so that these seasons can stay open and they don't necessarily get shut down because of budgets.
Governor Walker?
You know, I'm not in favor of adding to some of the challenges the fishery industry already has, but I do applaud the commercial fishermen for what they've done with ASME. Have they funded ASME over the years? Marketing is absolutely critical, and ASME is a shining example of how they have self-funded themselves. They've done their job, and I think we're a better state as a result of what they've done. So I fully support the commercial fishing and certainly applaud ASME's work.
I oppose an idea of a tax. I know the industry also self-imposes not only for marketing but also research and other elements within the industry. One of our biggest challenges right now the fishing industry is this trade war with Trump and China. It's added, they're our biggest fishing fish purchaser, and there's about a $700 million cost. What I'd be doing right now if I was governor, I'd be working with the states of Washington and Oregon and the Gulf Coast states, both Democrats and Republicans, putting pressure on the Trump administration to rethink these tariffs because it's hurting our business. Because here's what's going to happen. Once they start buying from somewhere else, China, they will continue to buy from there. They will not be buying from us. We should also be putting pressure on the administration because right now Russia can sell fish products to the United States, but we cannot sell our products to them. Seems a little unfair to me in all this trade war discussion. That's what we should be focused on. I'm a no on a tax. We should encourage the industry and work with them on research and do what we can to make sure they have the best research. But we need to put the pressure on the federal government, our delegation, and others to make sure we get a fair shake with our product.
Thank you. There was a question regarding tariffs and what can be done to push back on that. So we'll twin that in with what would you do as governor to increase manufacturing employment in seafood processing and other sectors? Beginning with Governor Walker.
To increase the employment?
Yeah, in manufacturing.
You know, one is certainly is cost of energy. You know, we need to bring down that cost of energy. And you look at Iceland as an example. There's a lot of processing in Iceland. They have no natural resources in Iceland. And there's a lot of resources that are taken to Iceland and made into a product because of the low-cost energy. So, you know, that has been an impediment to Alaska for a long, long time as far as the our cost of energy. I've always said that any product that leaves Alaska without a barcode on it, we're exploiting jobs. And we need to make sure that that's stopped. And the way you do that is you have the trained personnel. And, you know, technology is pretty incredible what's happening in technology and fish processing these days. It comes down to a big piece of it is the cost of energy.
You know, there's a product that I always found interesting to me as a kid growing up. You know, you had that certain salmon that you just kind of throw away because you really didn't want it or gave it to your dog. And the next thing we know, 2 decades later, we're producing these nice little fancy products called Yummy Chummies for dogs to pay 3 times more than you could ever imagine, and it was our old salmon. So you do have to think of the product in many different ways and utilize it. I was up in Naknek. We saw an incredible fish meal plant, which is creating more product of our end use of fisheries. But here's what was amazing about that. Fantastic plant, producing another product that we can sell in the market. We don't have Alaskans who understand how to utilize the technology to run the plant, so they're being shipped in. So when we think about these new industries, we have to think down the line, meaning if we're going to have this goal, whatever that is, on new manufacturing, who's going to work in that industry and make sure we have the educational system that is producing these young people to fill those jobs instead of importing them from out of state. So when you think about this in a broad spectrum, let's look at it all the way down the chain.
Certainly a cost is an impediment to just about any type of business we have in Alaska or any business that wants to take hold in Alaska. Your energy costs, as mentioned, are huge. And along with your health care costs and finding workers that are actually trained in these industries. And so as governor, I'll continue to pursue ways to lower the energy costs throughout the state, including Southeast Alaska. You've got a pretty good hydro system going on down here, and hopefully we can also have discussions about how to enhance the biomass possibilities for Southeast Alaska. But your energy costs are going to be an impediment to any future business, and we have to work on that.
Thank you. Next question, beginning with Senator Begich. In the context of continued state budget cuts and making up for the economic loss in communities, what is the role of the state government in economic development?
Well, the state has many roles. First is investing in infrastructure. This is what I learned when I was mayor. When you invest in infrastructure, the net result is private sector comes along and starts investing. You know, you saw the chart up there, didn't have a lot in capital improvements for the last several years. Here's what I've proposed. I would take $70 to $100 million of the annual flow, which is currently in the budget for capital. It's very rare, as you know, local governments, we finance it. We don't just pay cash. Right now, they spend about $140 on GF funds for capital. I would take $70 to $100 million of that. I would leverage that out in a 6-year GO bond that would produce about a $2 billion plus. I'd leverage it against local community priorities and figure out how to put that money to work over the next 6 years. When you invest in infrastructure, the private sector sees that you're investing in yourself, and therefore they will invest in the community. If they don't see the state doing that, they're not going to come and invest the millions and billions we need. So that would be one of the major things. And also, the backbone of any great economy is a great education system. And we have huge opportunities there to make sure we have the right workforce to work in the economy.
Could you repeat the question?
It was in the context of continued budget cuts to the states and from the state to local governments and how that impacts the economic loss in communities. Just basically, what is the role of state government in economic development?
A huge role for the state government is to get out of the way of business and help work with business to identify barriers to entry of businesses into the market. Regulations, permitting processes, these study processes that go on forever, these are things that we need to have a discussion about and how we can shorten these processes or get rid of them altogether, still protecting the environment, to allow businesses to take root in Alaska and grow. We also can't forget that for some time to come, our economy is going to be based or underwritten by oil. And we have to continually work at trying to get more oil in the pipeline so that we can have some of these infrastructure projects that folks are talking about and be able to have capital projects moving forward to be able to deal with ports and bridges and roads and ferries. So keeping oil flowing through the pipeline as well as working with business to make sure that we get barriers out of the way so that they can conduct their business in the fashion that needs to happen.
Thank you. Governor Walker.
I think government needs to be an active participant in the process. Here we are in Ketchikan. Ada, many years ago, put together the Ketchikan shipyard and helped finance that. And look at what we've just done. We're making two ferries here. This is the greatest place to ask that question, because this is the greatest example in the state of Alaska of government working with local communities to make a product, to make something happen. You know, we have been a bit of a passive landlord for far too long. It's time we step up and be part of the solution, part of the, you know, find out from companies what is it you need, rather than putting money in a road someplace or a bridge somewhere. Maybe we do that and there's a charge back like we did on the Red Dog Mine. Red Dog Mine has the only toll road in Alaska. So we need to step in and do our part on infrastructure and use the Ketchikan Shipyard as a shining example.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy, questions for you. Do you support the Juneau Access Road project? And if so, how do you plan to bring it to fruition?
I do support the project. I support roads that's going to lower the cost of goods, services. You're going to be able to punch into potentially new areas to produce our natural resources. And so as governor, this will be one of the first things that I look at for Southeast Alaska, as well as infrastructure across the state. But this was a project that was headed in the right direction, got derailed, and as governor, I'll pick it up, and we'll take it to the finish line.
Governor Walker.
You know, I was faced with that decision, and about the time that oil went to 26, and I had to look at it very seriously about can we do this. I looked at the cost of it, for one. I looked at the cost of building a road to a yet-to-be-new ferry terminal. It didn't connect to another road, so that was a concern to me as well. I looked at the $20 million a year of the estimate for the maintenance of it. At the same time, I was shutting down 40 maintenance facilities across the state. It's really hard to balance those two. You know, but I've been very supportive of Juneau Access. You know, I left money in the budget that was asked to leave money in the budget, and I left the money in the budget for other options of Juneau Access. But on that particular option, of the multiple options, I couldn't. I looked at the number of avalanche zones to go through, it was just a challenge. It was tough for me because I come from a building background, infrastructure background, but that one was a tough one for me. And I ultimately said no. I think there's better alternatives.
Senator Pickett,
I do not support it. The feds have given a no build on it, and I'm going to tell you, I love building roads. When I was mayor, we built more roads in my term than the four mayors combined before me, because you need to build roads to create infrastructure. But what we did is what we need to do on the state level. We sat down with our federal partners, our state partners, and our local government, obviously, and we said, let's figure out, we don't care who owns them, we want to figure out the priorities: safety, community, economic opportunity. We then assigned the list, and then we got busy and built the roads. That is what needs to be done with the state. You know, we have this STIP plan, which always changes under every governor. They always have new priorities. We need to have a more realistic, what's possible. Instead of planning these projects forever and they never get built, or throwing a couple million bucks at them and then you get your hopes up and it never gets completed, we have to have a real plan. We did in Anchorage and did roads that no one thought we would ever be able to do. We need the exact same thing on the state level. Look at our priorities, which ones have community support, economic opportunity, and also have safety issues, and then get busy and do them.
Thank you. We'll have a couple questions on the environment. How do you propose to balance the needs of economic development with environmental sustainability? And this is in the context of the transboundary mining issues and some of the effects on rivers and natural resources. Get with you, Governor.
You know, the transboundary issue is one that Lieutenant Governor Malott has done a lot of work on. Spent a lot of time with his counterparts and brought the counterparts actually to Alaska. I remember one particular mine that I don't recall the name of it, but they took them by helicopter to show them a pipe coming out of a mountain with leakage coming out of it, and that ultimately was resolved. So, you know, I think it's critical. We have we have a lot of relationships with our friends of the South in British Columbia. We have the fish treaties that we deal with. We've had some challenges in the past on the blockade of the ferries over some of this. It's a delicate balance, but I think that we need to be vigilant on the work that goes on that's going to impact our fish, because the fish don't know whose waters they're in as they go by, and if they run into a problem along the way, we're going to ultimately pay the price on this end on the fish. So we have to stay in a working partnership with them to make sure that we know what they're doing, they know what we're doing, and we can have some say, vice versa.
Can I make sure that you asked about sustainability in the long term?
In the context of balancing economic development and the environmental sustainability.
You bet. Well, first off, I would echo what the governor said on transboundary. You know, in my time in the U.S. Senate, we met many times with the folks from Canada as well as friends of ours who were former ambassador of Canada and others. That's an important part. But the question of how do you balance between this great state that we live in, this beautiful view that's outside today, this is what makes us Alaskans, why we are here. You know, it's why I don't support Pebble Mine, but I do support Donlin. It's a balance of what's the right products, what's the right way to do it. It's why when we redeveloped Ship Creek down in Anchorage, we had the Sierra Club on one side and the Anchorage Chamber on the other working together to make sure we did this the right way. So we enhanced our $6 million fisheries, but also made an incredible tourist attraction and a local ability. So it's a balance, and you have to be and understand that. For example, up in Fairbanks, where all they want is a simple buffer around Denali Park because of the baiting that's going on with wolves. I support that idea because it would protect our park, but also it's an economic opportunity to make sure that park continues to thrive. So it is a careful balance. Every area is a little different. You need to engage the community.
I agree that balance is an issue. In my opinion, the balance has swung the other way. You look at Red Dog Mine. I have three daughters that work at Red Dog Mine, two in the summer when they're going to college and one that works there full time. The creek that flows through Red Dog Mine had naturally occurring leaching lead and zinc into that creek. There was no fish. The company was required to clean up that creek, a naturally occurring leaching creek, clean it up, so now there are fish in it. I'm not complaining about that, but the point I'm trying to make is we have some of the strictest environmental regulations on the planet here in Alaska. And if we keep moving towards a situation where we're not going to be able to develop our resources, we're going to have to ask ourselves what kind of Alaska do we want to be in the future. There are lots of resource opportunities in Southeast Alaska, as across the state. I don't know if anyone has been up to Prudhoe Bay, but another example is when you go to Prudhoe Bay, you park a car, they basically put a diaper under the car so not one drop of oil hits the ground. We have great environmental regulations in the state of Alaska. We need to start thinking about getting our resources to work for our people, the working person, and creating more wealth.
Thank you. The next question also relates to the environment. Senator Begich, we'll begin with you. The Climate Action Leadership Team recently released a draft climate change policy and action plan. Have you reviewed it? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, a lot of the action plan also came from the original transition report that the governor received when he became governor. But there's elements of it that I like. I don't support the carbon tax, so if anyone asks me that later, I don't. When I was mayor of Anchorage, we worked on a lot of issues in, as well as senator, on what we do about climate change. You know, it's impacting us. We're ground zero when it comes to it. We should be, when it comes to research in this world on climate change, we should be the leaders in that. We're not. We're a partner, but not a leader in this area. We should be doing everything we can to change the dynamics. For example, there's a proposal that's been lingering for the last 2 years with the state of Alaska in creating a green bank. A green bank goes and helps finance projects on an economical way that doesn't cost subsidy from the state. It's a match between private sector to bring low-cost financing to opportunities to create more green energy in our state. And I think that's a huge and positive thing. When we think of this also, as I said earlier, when we think of renewable energy, alternative energy, we need to think also who's going to work in these industries, making sure we have kids that are going to be employed in this industry, not just put the turbines up, but who will maintain them.
There's much discussion as to how climate change is impacting Alaska, and there's no doubt that we have some situations, especially in coastal Alaska, where our villages, Shishmaref, Kivalin, and others, are being impacted by early storms in the fall and a lack of ice to protect those barrier islands. We're going to have to work with our local communities and work with the federal government to see how we're going to deal with this as it impacts Alaska going forward, but we also need to take a look at how we could take advantage of this situation. If, in fact, shipping lanes do open up going up into the Bering Sea and through the Arctic, we can be competitors with the Russians in terms of Arctic shipping and Arctic ports. I know that there are several icebreakers that are being commissioned by the federal government. They're going to be stationed here in Alaska, and we have to start looking at where we're going to place those icebreakers and how that's going to impact Alaska in a positive way for our economy.
You know, I created the Climate Action Leadership Committee about 9 months ago, And the makeup of the committee is very broad. We have young people. We have presidents of an oil company. We have lots of different folks on that. They are on the very soon will be forwarding to me their recommendations. And I've really stayed out of the process. This is their this is what they're going to do. And I appreciate the work they've done. They have worked really hard, and they have reached out and brought in this young man. Sam is from Shishmer. If you have people that have firsthand experience of what's happening around the state. When I spent time in Kivalina, you look at the size of Kivalina, it's an island that gets smaller every year because of the sea ice is not there. I mean, we are at ground zero, and we need to address it. And so I have not seen the recommendations in final yet. I think they're headed my way, and I'm anxious to receive them so I can take a look at them and see what we can do, what is the most obvious, the low-hanging fruit we can do, what can we afford. But you have to have a plan, and that's what this will be, is a plan associated with climate change in Alaska.
So moving on to a couple of energy questions, Senator Dunleavy, we'll start with you. Do you support a natural gas pipeline, and how would you go about building it?
That's a good question. So I think we all support monetizing our resources, including gas. We have vast amounts of gas in the North Slope and in Cook Inlet. I certainly want to get the gas to market, certainly want to monetize it. The question is this particular project going to be the project that gets us there? I don't have the answer. And quite frankly, I think at the table, only the governor has the answers, because we're not privy to the confidentiality agreements that are wrapped around this project. So it's very difficult to answer, is this the project? I certainly want to be supportive of monetizing our gas. I think we can get our gas to market. I don't know if this is the project. Once we get in the, once I get into the office and I'm able to look at those confidentiality agreements, I'll have a better answer for folks. But there are way too many questions at this point. How much is the gas going to cost at the wellhead? What are they going to pay for it over in Asia? What's the overall cost of the project in between? Too many questions, not enough answers, and we don't have the ability to crack open those confidentiality agreements right now.
Boy, 1 minute, so it is. this is an incredible opportunity for Alaska. I am very, very supportive of it, but I'm very supportive of what has happened. The legislature created the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation to do the legwork. I was offered as governor from the producers. They said, well, I'd be willing to take it over and bring the low interest, the tax exempt financing, the lower cost of money to the project. Would I be willing to do that? I said, of course. We went to the market. We'd spent $600 million and had not been to the market yet. We went to the market. The market was very excited about this for Alaska. But it's not, so, I mean, we're on the right, we absolutely are on the right track. We have finally have the alignment that we long ago should have had. So working with Exxon, BP, and Conoco has been very, very beneficial, very engaging. And the announcement we saw the other day and what BP had done as well, they want to monetize the gas as well. You know, we stuff more gas in the ground every day than they consume in California, Washington, Oregon combined. It's the biggest reinjection process in the world. It's time to come to Alaskans at a cheap price on its way to the world market.
Senator Begich.
You know, what Senator Dunleavy said about monetizing the gas, I think we all support it. I like the idea of a pipeline, but also there's a lot of information we don't have that we can't answer today. We know what are the trade-offs for these partners to be renewed partners to us in the sense of providing their gas. That's an unknown question. But the issue is, you know, I know Alaskans, we love big projects, and we hope for big projects. But we have to not only think about the pipeline, but also what else we're going to do to grow and diversify this economy. So the pipeline is a piece of the equation. I think we should also be spreading our ability to not only talk to China, but other potential buyers of our fuel, because you need the competition to have the right pricing at the end of the day for the product that we want to sell. But again, focus just on the pipeline doesn't grow our economy for the long term. We need to be thinking about how we grow our fisheries industry, tourism, transportation, our tech industry, what's happening with our unmanned aircraft facilities up in Fairbanks, and many other things. So, yes, monetize. Don't have all the information that the governor has, so can't tell you what the trade-offs are. That concerns me.
Thank you. Here's a free-for-all here. Governor Walker, we'll start with you. What other energy sources are you looking at? Wind, geothermal?
Oh, boy. Absolutely. Hydrokinetic is a very exciting opportunity because that's in-river opportunities that that you can capture energy. If you've been through the Seward Sea Life Center, I spend most of my time in the basement with Daryl Schaefermeyer, because what they've done is they've run the pipes out into the ocean, brought it back in, captured the heat out of there. They heat the entire facility with the heat exchange coming off of the ocean. Now that's moving up into the community of Seward. We actually put a little bit of money in the budget for them this year for them to be able to continue that. So, you know, wind, I mean, solar, I signed a bill at Mayor Castle's house in Fairbanks North Star Borough last month. He has reduced his energy consumption in Fairbanks by 90%. It's amazing what he has done. He does that largely through solar, a little bit of wind. Kodiak is 99.8% on renewable. The only 0.2% that's left is just to exercise the engines as a backup. We can do this. We have all the opportunities throughout the state. We can do this.
Senator Begich. You know, the state has had a goal to be 50% renewable energy consumption by 2025. They're at 22 or 23%. They have not been able to move forward, mainly because there hasn't been a very long-term strategic plan. I like all these types of energies. I mean, when I was mayor, we started a project to recapture methane gas out of our landfill, which we now sell to the military base less than you can do natural gas, which is an incredible project. You can utilize wind and tidal and geothermal. The list goes on and on, but we actually have a plan and a strategy to make it happen. As I mentioned briefly about the turbines in Western Alaska, for example, they're fantastic. They're lowering cost of energy, but the people who repair them are shipped in, because we didn't think about the chain. So when you set the goals, you also want to make sure we're putting our own people to work in these fields. This is an incredible opportunity. If you can do it here in Alaska in renewable energy, you can do it anywhere. And we should be the leader in many of these areas. So I'm a big fan of this. We did it when I was mayor, from a wind farm, methane gas recovery, many other things, and we can do it as a state.
Alaska is a big state. It's spread out. Its population spread out. And it's kind of interesting, because we're an energy exporting state and we're awash in energy, but we're having a hard time in some parts of the state harnessing the type of energy that best meets the local needs. So I was up in Tok a couple of weeks ago, and Tok has a fascinating biomass facility up there at their school. They picked up an old 100-year-old steam engine out of, I think it was Maryland, and refurbished it to actually produce electricity now for the school. And they have excess electricity and they have excess heat. There's some real opportunities with biomass, not just in the interior, but here in Southeast as well. You have hydro here. We have hydro possibilities along the coast, but also up in the interior. We have to make a decision on what we're going to do with energy moving forward. Are we going to settle on a gas? Gas is the basic energy for the rail belt. Are we going to look at hydro possibilities up there as well? Biomass down here, hydro down here. We have to make some decisions, but I think if we come together and coalesce around certain energy sources, we can bring the cost down, and that's going to be the key. What energy source, what method of producing electricity is going to bring costs down the most for the average Alaskan? That's what we need to look at.
Thank you. The question next is, how important is it to keep the capital in Juneau for Southeast economy for the state? Let me just help with the definition of the capital. That would be not just a nameplate, but the legislature, our agencies and leaders. And that question will begin with Senator Begich.
I support keeping the capital in Juneau and its legislative operations. I think it's important. It is the place of our capital. I know for years gone by there's always been this great debate. When I was on the Anchorage Assembly, I remember I opposed moving the capital to my constituents. I'm not very fan of that, but I believed it was the right idea to keep it in Juneau. Also, what my approach is going to be, not only do the commissioners need to be there, but the commissioners also need to be traveling around the state in a lot of ways, because the only way you learn about what the needs are and what the people are concerned about and what the employees are concerned about is you got to move them around the state. When I was mayor and when I was a U.S. senator, very rarely did I stay in my office, and my staff, it drove them crazy, but I got out there to the community, because that's how I learned and got the best ideas of how to change the way we do the operations, may it be in the city or when I was in the U.S. Senate. I would do the same thing with my cabinet members as well as other department heads. But the state of Alaska's capital is Juneau, Alaska.
Senator Dunleavy.
Certainly the capital is important to Juneau. It's part of their economy. And I don't foresee the capital moving. We have huge issues that we have to deal with. Energy, crime, budgets. What is the state of Alaska going to look like in the future? So the capital is going to stay in Juneau. I do agree that we need to get our folks out of Juneau to go to other parts of the state to see what the problems are and engage with Alaskans on finding the solutions to those issues. But again, the capital will remain in Juneau under my administration.
No question, non-negotiable in the capital states in general.
Thank you. So that you know, we went through an incredible number of questions. There are still quite a few questions. I try to get at least the ones that were the same topic, two or three multiples, to get those questions there. The questions that did not get answered, I'm going to lay out in front of the candidates here so they can be aware of the causes and concerns that you each have, because they're all very good questions. We're going to allow each of them 3 minutes now to have their closing comments, and then we'll need to wrap up for the day. We could go on and on and on. We really do appreciate your participation. But we'll go in the reverse opposite order of the opening statements, which began alphabetically. So, Governor, please begin with your closing remarks.
I will. Well, thank you for this. This has been a great forum. It really has. I've been here, and there's been a lot of music coming off that stage in the past. So it's a good memories in this room. You know, I think the job of governor, I believe it's to be the CEO of the state. And I think that for far too long we have been sitting back waiting for something to happen and live off of what happens. We need to be out there. I'm a big believer in going to where the opportunity is. We see that in the marketing and in the tourism industry. We see it in fisheries. We need to do that as well as a state in general. When I sat down with President Moon of Korea, he was very impressed with what Alaska had. You know, the president of Tokyo Gas came to Juneau and to spend a week where we talked about the opportunities in Alaska, and certainly presidents of other companies has as well. I'm a big believer in going out and bringing that opportunity home. You know, we took 50 Alaskans to China recently on a trade mission. It was pretty phenomenal what took place. I believe we're going to see direct flights from Asia to Alaska. I think that's going to be happening soon. I think that's going to open up tourism in Alaska from Japan, Korea, and China like we've never seen before. I'm really excited about that. I describe sometimes Alaska as a pent-up opportunities that because we sit back and we just take the wrong role. We just aren't aggressive enough to go out and sit down and have that conversation to bring it home. So, you know, and my vision of Alaska is an Alaska that is a very diversified income, not one that lives session to session on funding, that we have that piece of it taken care of, that we have the education and the safety that we need, but we have to fund it. And so we really have to finish the hard work. It hasn't been pleasant. I don't regret one minute the work we've had to do, but we have to have the political courage to look at the future of Alaska, not necessarily the future of the next election, and recognize that if we take actions that cost us to not to be reelected, take that action. Alaska's worth it. The future is worth it. That's who we represent, and for far too long we haven't done that. So I'm a firm believer of making bold decisions and making sure they're good for Alaska. But go out and represent Alaska. Go out and, you know, if it involves being aggressive to get onto an airplane, you get on that airplane, you talk about Alaska the entire time. So that's what I've done. That's what I'll continue to do. I would hope to have your support in November. It's been an incredible honor to be the governor of the state. One I never ever thought I was ever dreamed I would ever have, and I would love to have 4 years to finish with the cabinet that we have. If this cabinet can get us through what we've just come through, my goodness, what they can do once we have our fiscal feet underneath us, what we can do with our economy going forth, I'm very excited about that. I don't want Alaska to miss that opportunity.
Senator Dunleavy.
I want to thank everyone for being here. Once again, I want to thank Senator Begich and Governor Walker for being part of the forum. These forums, I learn a lot. And so I'm running for governor because I want to get Alaska back on track. As I mentioned, when I came up here in 1983, the optimism and the opportunities were incredible here in Alaska. Southeast Alaska is where it started. We have more resources than any other state in the country. And oftentimes I tell the story, the tale of two countries, two sovereigns. So you have Venezuela, for example, that has all the oil in the world, more oil than Saudi Arabia. It has incredible timber stands, gold, silver, bauxite, you name it. One of the richest countries in the world. It's failing, and it's failing not because they've run out of oil or bauxite or gold or timber. It's failing because of poor leadership, bad management, and bad policies. Conversely, you look at a small, isolated country in the North Atlantic, an island country, Iceland, 300,000 people, no oil, no gas, no gold, no silver, virtually no timber, and they've got an incredible economy based upon tourism. They have smelting plants on the island, four smelting plants. They were a fiscal capital of Europe up until a couple years ago. It's an incredible place. And why did they do it, or how did they do it? Because they had great management. They had great policies. They had great leadership. They were able to harness the resources that they have in their country and put it to work for them. Their unemployment is virtually zero. It's below 2%. And so you have Alaska, the state I came to back in 1983, the state that I thought I was going to live in forever, and hopefully I will, and where my kids are going to live, and my wife is from. This is an incredible place with incredible opportunities, but we need to put our resources together. And we need to manage this government better. Again, as we mentioned, right now we have the worst crime statistics in the country. We have the worst educational outcomes in the country. We have the highest unemployment in the country. And we have folks leaving the state of Alaska for the first time here in the last year and a half for points further south. The lower 48 is booming. We are not. We have opportunities here, but we need to have the right people in office managing the state in the right manner, putting these resources to work. And this is why I'm running. I believe in Alaska. I believe in the future of Alaska. And with the right leadership, we can get Alaska where we need it to be. I respectfully ask for your support, and I really appreciate being here today. Thank you.
Senator Begich.
Thank you all very much. Thank you for being patient with us with all our answers as quickly as we could on all the state's problems within a minute. Let me also say this. You know, we live in a world today where politics is toxic, negative, partisan, fighting, bickering. I try not to watch news anymore at night. It just is too depressing. You know, I got in the race because I believe that we can change that, and we can change that here. You know, if you would have asked me many years ago before I got into politics, would I ever get into it, the answer would be no. My father died when I was 10, and maybe subconsciously, you know, he was in politics, and it took my father away, and I was not interested in getting that. I spent my time building businesses. From the age of 14, I've been a serial entrepreneur. My wife started selling smoked salmon on a street corner in Anchorage. Now it's 5 retail stores. But serving your public is an important part. My mother raised 6 kids as a single parent. She always taught us that, look, if you see a problem, go after it, fix it, solve it. Don't sit around, because it may not get solved. That's what I've decided to do in this election. You know, Alaska has an incredible future. You know, when you hear the statistics as reeled off by Senator Dunleavy, they're bad statistics. But where we can go is up to us. You can stay where you are. You can go back in past, or you can move to the future. I believe in moving to the future. Governors not only have to have big ideas and opportunity to see where the future is, but they also have to run the government to make it more efficient so people out there realize they're getting value for what they invest in. That's what I want to do. Every single day I see young people. It doesn't matter if it's in Bethel, the 5-year-old I met, or down here in Southeast, a family, or the young single parent in Fairview in Anchorage. They have hopes and dreams. But you know what? They're not at the power, the tables of power. They don't have lobbyists. They're not at meetings like this. They're out there working 3 jobs, trying to make it. Why do we have 80,000 people on Medicaid today? Because the employers that employ them, some of the largest in the world, don't pay them livable wages. So we have to struggle every day to make sure they're taken care of. This is why I'm in this race. The people who are not at the table today. The people who are forgotten every single day. It is our job as elected officials, never forget them, to fight for a best education, a safe community, a place where their young people have a future, that they see the jobs that we may not even see today, but they see them. Our job is to make and open that door everywhere we can, and not get caught up into the negative, naysaying, partisan politics. That doesn't help us. It doesn't grow our state. I see the future. I'm excited about the future every day. I'm excited about this campaign because I believe the next governor will shape the next decade or more of where our state goes. I'd be honored to have your support and help in this campaign. Thank you all very much.
On behalf of our members from Yakutat to Ketchikan, Saxman, and Metlakatla, and supporting partners from Washington State, Canada, and beyond, thank you all for joining us. And for the locals that came in today to join us, we appreciate that. And everyone gathered here, thank you all very much. We'll reconvene at 2 o'clock to continue our program. Thank you.